Well, what we're going to talk about today, I'm an expert at. And the reason I'm an expert at it is because I've had problems with it. And I'm really not an expert at it, but that's really my only credentials, is that I've had problems in this area. And what we're going to talk about follows very closely and very meshes very well with some of the things that Mark talked with us about 2 weeks ago, and that is accountability to one another. And what I'm going to talk about is the areas that there's a book here that's called Every Brother's Problem, or something like that. Every Man's Battle. It's a book that Steve gave me, and I've gotten through about half of it, and it's very good. But what we're going to talk about is the struggle that most men have with either, if you want to call it, sexual addiction or temptation to things that area. And the reason we have it is because of something very good that God intended us for us to have. And I think we all know that, and that is He gave us a drive. He gave me a wonderful drive, you know, for things like this. And so He gave us a drive for fulfillment of ourselves and fulfillment of our mates. And that's what that drive is for. And it's, in my mind, I can't think of a more perfect example of something that was intended for very good and very positive and very fulfilling and very much natural to be taken by Satan and made into something very dirty, made by Satan into something very evil, made into Satan as something very addictive and very much something that can ruin your life. I don't have a lot of, I made some points. I really struggle with how to present this class, simply because there's a lot of emotions here from my standpoint of having dealt with this. And I know some other men in the congregation, there's a lot of emotions in this area as well. But I said, Ron, the only way you're going to be able to do this is to just sit down and make some points that you want to get across, and then try to talk about those points. There's good things in the book, but the book doesn't speak everything to the way I feel. Another book that I've been looking for a long time and finally found is called Out of the Shadows. Now, this is a book which is not written from the standpoint of God at all. It's written by a psychologist, and it deals with, and the caption down here is Understanding Sexual Addiction. It deals with sexual addiction from the psychological standpoint. But you know, what happened with me is when I read this book, in the very beginning, he starts talking about cycles that you get into and very much how that becomes the addiction. And I read these and I said, you know, I wonder if I know this guy personally some way, and I've talked with him before, because he's described everything right here that has happened to me and everything that's a problem that's in my own life. And although he doesn't approach it from God's standpoint, he approaches it, there's a lot of undertones there of the way that the Lord works, and a lot of the undertones of how it becomes so addictive. So I would also recommend this book. Now, one problem with this book that I had is that the first probably half of it is very good because he approaches it strictly from a psychological standpoint. The second part, when he got into some of the case-by-case studies that he had looked at, was very difficult for me to read because it brought these things up in my mind. And so that's the difficulty of the book. So if you get this book and you start reading it and you get into sections that you say, wow, you know, I don't need to be reading this. This is almost like going through the same thing again. Then maybe you should just put it down, because sometimes it can arouse temptation. At least it did in myself. So if you look at this, and some of the things that are said in here, as well as some other resources that I had, says that 80 to 90% of men have problems in this area. Now, that was astounding to me in the first place, because when I first started having problems in this area of addiction to sexual attraction, it was, I was very young, not even in high school, in junior high. I thought that I was the only one that had it, you know. I thought, you know, this is not right. I shouldn't be doing this, because I knew God, having been raised in a Christian home. My dad was an elder, have been raised to be very morally pure and very much what God wanted me to be, I said, this is not right. And man, I just can't believe, because I thought my dad never had problems with this. And so I approached it from that standpoint of, well, you know, I really need to just work on this. And it started out just by looking at some magazines in a drugstore. And they weren't near as bad as magazines are today. But just looking at some of those, and it aroused all of these things in me. And but I thought I was the only one that had this. So I was really astounded when I read these statistics that 80 to 90% of men have this problem. And I think the reason because of the gap is because I think a lot of men who said they didn't really do. You know? So I say if you're in the top 95 to 100% that do not have that problem, then you are really blessed. But I'm sure that the Lord has given that you have other areas like that.
Just to add to what you said, I talked to any of you remember Michael Campbell. He was an intern this summer. Mm-hmm. And we've been talking about this. And when he got back to Harding, he ad hocly asked 15 guys in the dorm, some of them Bible majors. He said, how many of you have had a problem with pornography on the internet? And how many out of the 15 guys said they had a problem with it? 15.
So I think it is, but I do believe that there are degrees of problems that different men have with this, and I think that some men may have a slight problem, but are very easily able to combat it. I seem to be the one that needs people to help me to combat it. So that's what I'm talking about today. I want to start out by first of all, just after I put my glasses on, talking about what it means to be holy, and because I think this is sort of more or less the basis, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but I want us to understand that, because one of the things that was in the Out of the Shadows book that he talked about was that when you get into this addictive cycle which you're in, you develop a sense of you develop a known persona of who you are. And he said that everybody who's in addictive cycle, whether it's to alcohol or whether it's to pornography or sex or anything like that, or whether it's to overeating, develops this mental set that they're not worth anything, that they have no value, that they are worthless. And so that's where I want to start, because when we understand that we are worth something is the first step, I think, in combating the wiles of Satan in this particular area. And the way that I can do that is by looking at the Bible. There's another series called A Holiness Series, which addresses this as well. And the gentleman that does this, I don't even remember his name, to tell the truth, but he starts out by talking about what holiness is and what it means to be holy. And I guess if you ask 9 out of 10 of the people on the street today what it meant to be holy, that they would say, well, it means to be a preacher, or it means to be a monk, or it means to be a priest, you know, who has his life all together and has no problem with any temptations or anything like this. And they would say, they equate holiness with perfection, I guess you could say. In other words, to be perfect means to be holy. And in some ways, that's not wrong, because God tells us, Jesus says in Matthew, be therefore perfect even as your Heavenly Father is perfect. So that is the goal, but that's really not what holiness is. And this particular series, he goes all the way back to the Old Testament, and he looks at when Moses was called by God at the burning bush. And when Moses went and he saw this burning bush and he was interested and he walked over there, God told him, take off your shoes because the ground that you're on is holy ground. And really the Hebrew word there, holy, does not mean pure or perfect. The word holy means chosen, is what it means. The Hebrew word means chosen there. So what God is saying is that I have chosen to come down and through this bush, I have chosen to come and talk to you, and I've chosen this ground. This ground's not different from any other ground around there other than the fact that I have chosen it. And so therefore, in choosing it, I say it's holy ground because it's selected by me. And so that's really what holy means. And if you go to the New Testament, it's really true. If you go to the New Testament and look how Paul addresses in the prison epistles, how he addresses every church he talked about in there, Corinthians in particular, Galatians, Colossae, all of them had tremendous problems, and a lot of them had problems in the same area of immorality and sexual purity. But the way he opens each book, in almost any case, is he talks out and he says to the saints or to the people who are holy in this particular city. And the saint word and holy are the same Greek word which are translated. It can be translated the holy, or it can be translated saint. It can be translated called out. But it's the same word. And that is, it carries the implication of holy. And that holy word means simply that you are chosen of God. Because he says, for example, to the Corinthians, to the saints in Corinth, and you look at some of the things that the saints in Corinth have been doing, and you say, these are not saints. You know, because in my mind of what a saint is, and that is perfect. Because these, one man sleeping with his father's wife, for example, I would not call that a saint. But Paul did. He called all of that church the holy church, the church of saints. And so I think it's important to understand that, is that regardless of what kind of problems we have in this area, regardless of the problems that I have with temptation in this area, that I have been chosen by God because I've accepted Jesus into my heart, I've been baptized, I'm trying to do the things that he wants me to. And so therefore, I am holy, I am chosen by God, and so therefore I am a saint. Even when I sin, I'm a saint because Jesus has covered that and he's made me perfect because of his sacrifice. So I think that is really the first step, because I know when I would go through some of these things with the addiction, and you would, there's this cycle that goes on there, and I'm not going to get into the cycle, but you go through that and it was perfect for me, and you get to the end and you just have this remorse and this grief for what you've done. And it happens every time, and the danger of it is that if you do it enough, it gets to where the grief becomes less and less. And I found myself, for example, just going through and saying, well, I'm not going to do that again. God, help me not to do that again. And I would share it with God, but then I would go back, and 2 days later, you know, same thing would start over again. You have this arousal, and then you go through the acts of it, and then you have the grief again. And as you go more and more into that, it gets more and more acceptable in your own mind because it becomes a way of life. And then you start having problems in other areas, and it becomes, you think you're okay, but you're not. So I would just say that let's start by remembering that we're holy, and that God has chosen us, and he's chosen us for a purpose, and that purpose is very clearly stated in what he says. The second point that I wanted to make is pretty obvious as well, and that is, God has said that abusive, this naturally given instinct, is not to be practiced or even thought of or acted out in our own mind. And I want to turn to a couple of scriptures to look at that. First of all, Matthew chapter 5. I think we've looked at this maybe in this class before. I know it's been referred to. I think it was referred to by Mark last week or 2 weeks ago. Starting in verse 27. You have heard that it was said, you shall not commit adultery, but I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lust for her in his heart committed adultery with her in his heart. If your right eye makes you stumble, tear it out and throw it away. For it is better for you to lose one of the parts of your body than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. If your right hand makes you stumble, cut it off and throw it away from you. For it is better for you to lose one of the parts of your body than for your whole body to go into hell. Jesus said, not only is it wrong to commit the act, but it's wrong to think about the act in your heart. It's basically what he's saying. If you look at a woman to lust after her, and the lust is how you carry that out in your own heart. So God has made it very, very plain that we are not to do that. And I think we all know that, so we won't dwell on that very long. I have problems with this one. don't know how many of you have problems with it, but I have problems with this one because, and I think a lot of this is because of the way our society is today, that everything is pushed with sex, everything which, you know, even anymore, the normal apparel that doesn't appear to be that outgoingly can sometimes be very attractive in a lot of ways. And I think you know what I'm talking about. It's just that our society is getting more and more like that. And in some ways, when I hear like some of the Muslims talking today about how degraded our society has gotten, I agree with them. I have a Muslim guy that works with me. I think you've heard me refer to him before. But he talks about how degraded the American values have gotten. I think he's right because that's the way our society is. But the thing is that we have to live. If God puts you in a Sodom or Gomorrah, you've got to live in that because we know that Lot lived in it and was pure. And so therefore, we're not going to be able to change society necessarily, although we can change it within our own selves, but we have to live in it.
You know, to point out how strong it is internationally for men. Every Middle Eastern man that's come to my work, they come for training or things. Every one of them, without exception, they're all married men, families, all that kind of stuff. Without exception, we talk to the people that are going to entertain them here and say, well, the first thing they want to do is go to Isa.
Yeah.
Muslim.
Yeah.
Men. To me, it's more hypocritical in other areas too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Often.
Yeah. I think you're right. I mean, but so okay. That's the other scripture I wanted to look at is in Ephesians chapter 5. When I read this, particularly in this area, I know that Paul is talking about somewhat of a broad range of things here, but I think of my own thoughts of sexual purity here is what I think. But immorality, starting with verse 3, but immorality and any impurity or greed must not even be named among you as is proper among the saints. And there must be no filthiness or silly talk or coarse jesting, which are not fitting, but rather giving of thanks. For this you know with certainty, that no immoral or impure person or covetous man who is an idolater has an inheritance in the kingdom of God. Let no one deceive you with empty words, for because of these things the wrath of God comes upon the sons of disobedience. Therefore, do not be partakers with him. For you were formerly darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. For the fruit of light consists of all goodness and all righteousness and truth. Trying to learn what is pleasing to the Lord, do not practice any unfruitful deeds. Do not participate in the unfruitful deeds of darkness, but instead, even expose them, for it is disgraceful even to speak of the things which are done by them in secret. But all things become visible when they are exposed to the light, for everything that becomes visible is light. For this reason, I say, awake, sleeper, and arise from the dead, and Christ will shine on you. This is kind of my... This is kind of my key verse of what I think in this area. And let me tell you some of the things that I think about when I read this. First of all, I think that he makes it very clear as to what place and how much tolerance there will be to this in this area in the very beginning. He says, no immorality, no impure thought is to be counted among you. That's pretty clear. So it's not a question of, like you were saying, Jim, of going out of town and, you know, you don't have any of your brothers or sisters around, and so therefore I get in this motel and I can turn on this movie, and who's going to know? I pay the clerk at the desk, and nobody knows, nobody sees. It's done in secret. That's everything that Paul's talking about here, is that everything done in darkness, that's exactly what Satan wants us to do. But everything, he says, everything needs to be done in the light. You know what that means? That means that I have no secrets from any of you guys as to the problems that I've had in this area. Now that's for me. I think the problem, the reason that my addiction advanced to the point that it did was because that I kept thinking that I could lick it on my own. And it was not in the light, it was in the dark. You know, I had all these things that I was doing. And yes, I would confess them. Yes, before the Lord in prayer, I would confess them. But I thought that I could take care of it by myself. You know, the old, we were talking about, you know, why we don't want to share things with brothers with one another. Because, you know, it's not manly, you know, to be able to talk about these things. And so I thought that I could do it all by myself. And so therefore, Satan said, yep, just keep thinking that, Ron. You know, you don't need to confess it. You don't need to talk to anybody. You don't even need to talk to your wife about it. You don't need to talk to anybody about it. But just keep going, because, you know, I can get my clutches on you even more. The more and more you think like that. And I think that's exactly what Paul's saying here. So he says, because the way that you deal with things that you have problems with is not by keeping them in the darkness, but make them so that the light shines on them. You know, that's very clear to me, because God, that's just what God says. So I think that's the answer. And really, that kind of gets into some other points I have down here.
So when they talk about...
Any comments? I just want to ask for comments.
When they talk about light and darkness in the New Testament, is that really what they're referring to? Things done, you know, thinking in like cover of secrecy versus being exposure? Is it more of a community issue, or are they referring to other things?
Well, I think in a lot of cases, light and darkness is a reference to good and evil as well. I mean, you can go either way there. But when I read that, he's saying, well, verse 12, for it is disgraceful even to speak of things which are done by them in secret. I mean, he connects the secretness with the darkness to me in this particular passage here. Now, there's other areas where he talks about in the New Testament, I think, where they talk about dark and light, where he's referring to good and evil. Now, let me say this also. I don't think that as men that we have to go up in front of the congregation necessarily and confess everything that we've done and get into the graphic details of everything that we've done. I don't think that's... You can walk in light, and you don't really necessarily have to do that. If God calls you to do that, then you do that. I think God called me to do that because I got up in front of the congregation and confessed that because of the position that I was in the church at the particular time, and because I just felt like I really needed that. And another reason is because my wife said I needed to do that. So I did that. But I think that if you have problems in this area, and like Mark said, you get two or three brothers who maybe you know have struggled with this, or not necessarily even have to struggle with this, but that you have some accountability there. I tell you, when I go out of town, the only way that I can resist that is to have accountability to someone about it. Because if I don't, I'm done. That's just all there is to it. And in this other series, a guy talked, he was talking about, and this guy was a minister. I don't know what church he was a minister of. But he went out of town to a convention, and he took one of the guys from another church in his area with him. Or they went together. And so they were good friends, and they were walking, not probably really good friends because of what he says, but they were walking and they checked into the hotel and each of them had separate rooms, and this friend of his told him, said, now, here's what I want you to do. I want you to call me 15 minutes after we get into the room, and then I want you to call me every 30 minutes after that and just ask me, what are you doing? And he asked his friend to do that for him, and he said, well, why? He said, because there's movies in that room, and because I have a problem with that. And if I don't have accountability, I'm going to turn one of them on. But he says, I want you to call me And he says, well, how long do you want me to do it? He says, until I tell you, quit doing it, I'm going to bed and I'm going to sleep. And that's how he said that this guy dealt with this addiction that he had. And it was, you know, that was kind of amazing to me as well. Because my son has asked me before, I took my son to Abilene, Toby. And I was really tired on my way. I used to be able to make that drive back and forth at just the same time. It shows how old I'm getting because I get tired now. And so, in fact, Susie said, well, you know, you need to stop in Tulsa or somewhere and spend the night. So I did. And the last thing my son said to me before I went, is he said, I don't want you to turn those movies off. Sorry, I get that way.
Can I share something?
That would be good.
Yesterday, I had this talk with my sons. And because I got with Ron and a couple of other brothers, and I asked them to share it with the elders this summer. But I went through this summer. I fell short. I just made this great discovery on the internet. I fell right into it. And so I confessed that to them. It took me all this time to find the right moment with my two oldest boys. I shared it with them yesterday. And they were gracious. They thanked me for telling them. I told them, I said, I'm telling you guys now because nobody ever talked to me when I was a kid. That's great. And I want you to have a head start on me. You know, that I said, and I was really realistic with him. I said, you know, you're going to have this problem.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you're going to have it. And so start thinking about it now. Why you're going to be different.
And, yeah.
You know, and God is there and how he can help you and what he wants from you. You know, that's a burden off my heart, because I just have known since, you know, it's been 3 months. Mm-hmm. So 2 or 3 months ago I was going to do this, and it took me all this time. I did yesterday.
Good. I'm glad you did that.
You know, as far as accountability goes, there is sort of a, I think something that is protective on the internet is, like, I have a sense of accountability. You know, I feel like people know wherever I go on the internet, or if they wanted to, I think it's available. That does. That helps a lot. Mm-hmm.
They're the ones that told me to do that. So, yeah, we need to get the software where that stuff's blocked out. And,
okay.
And give me all these ideas. You know, you can look at the history or your phone about how to keep each other accountable. They were coming up with all that.
Yeah, when we were starting to look at putting accountability on our computer, screening out those, Susie said, well, you know, Do you really want to do that? I said, absolutely. I said, I want you to do that because I don't want to have that problem. She said, well, what if you need to research something about breast cancer or something? I said, then I'll get you to do it. You know, I don't want to have that there as a temptation. So I said, and I want you to put that on the account for everybody in our family to do that. And you know, along that line, I think this was another point that I really want to make, is I do think it's important for us to talk to our kids about this, because in thinking about myself, you know, and I mentioned that my dad was an elder. I actually confessed this to my dad early on, and I told him that I was having trouble with these magazines, and he said, well, where do you have them? And I said, oh, I don't have them. I just go to the drugstore and look at them, and then I get the images in my mind. And he said, okay. And looking back on it, you know, my dad was a good man. He was a godly man. But I don't think he had a clue how to handle that. Mm-hmm. Because of the way that things were done at that particular time. And his advice to me was, well, don't do it again. Mm-hmm. And so that was the sum total of advice that I had on that particular thing. And so you know, I tried, like he said, I tried not to do it again, but guess what? I did it again. And so that's the thing that I want to avoid with my own kids. And I know that my two sons, Toby and Todd, have talked about it together, you know, and that's exactly the reason that my son told me, you know, don't. And because of him, I didn't do that, you know, when I got there, because I knew I had accountability there. Roger.
Are addictions in general, Ron, like whether it's drugs or alcohol or, you know, even cigarettes or pornography or whatever it is, do people overcome them in the sense of, do you always have the addiction for your whole life? Is that, depend on what it ends up being, or how does that work?
Well, I don't know what to say for other people, but I think I'm going to have it for the rest of my life, to tell you the truth. What he suggests in this particular book here from a psychological standpoint is that although this is about sexual addiction, he talks about the relationships between the different addictions. And one of them is, he said that in about, I think it's something like 75% of the cases of real hardcore sexual addiction, that there's alcohol involved as well, or drugs. And so he talks about the interactions, and he suggests the 12-step thing in his particular book for dealing with that. And there is, you know, and he said the 12-step is kind of the same thing as, I mean, Overeaters Anonymous is the 12-step thing. He said there are already groups set up for sexual addiction that involve, and Steve may know more about those than I do.
But like an alcoholic, you don't go into a bar again, or
you don't go to certain movies whether you have a sexual addiction or not.
Yeah, yeah. But bottom line is the trait, I guess, or I don't know how to describe it.
The drive.
Yeah, whatever, yeah.
I think the drive will always be with me there. And that's the reason I know that I always have to have accountability.
Maybe when you're a real old geezer, that'll be okay.
I don't know. Sometimes I think it gets worse the older you get.
You say with Dad, we have to be very proactive with our kids about this, especially with the computer age. You know, as I've described with other parents, it's a lot like imagine yourself as a kid knowing that your dad has Playboy in his bathroom closet. It's all unlocked in your home all day. And that accessibility is about the accessibility, or even easier than that,
yeah,
for with the internet. And we must do some things like have the computer in a public room and absolutely not have it in our own bedrooms.
Yeah.
And talking with them about it, having some screen things like we talked about. And we really need, in fact, since you're doing some research, could you bring some research back for us so that we can have it for, I've done some, but it was 2 years ago when I did mine. Just to have, we have to, just to protect our kids. And they're going to have to deal with it. We have to talk with them about it.
It's not just at your house, too, but in the circle.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other comments? I think I've not gone through these points one by one, but I think we've touched on everything. I did want to read one other passage in James chapter 5. Like I said, I really think the Ephesian passage is the real key one for me. It really speaks more to me making sure that the things that I do are in the light and not in the darkness. And that, and I think he's talking about immorality there, very specifically, and what the Gentiles were doing, because they were used to the temples of where, you know, you had prostitutes in the temple and you would go there and a lot of things like that. James chapter 5 and verse 6. He says, therefore, confess your sins to one another and pray for one another so that you may be healed. the effective prayer of a righteous man can accomplish much. And so I think that again is more from the standpoint of our confession with one another. And like I said, I think if what you need to do is just find someone that you're accountable with if you have problems in this area. And then it works pretty good like that, it seems like.
You know, one of the biggest issues with me, like, reading the Bible and just wondering if I should have faith or not, or believe it or not, was a lot. I would pray for, like, shields to temptation, or the ability to resist temptation. I never felt like that changed very much, and so that was kind of a stumbling block a lot, you know, because I felt like I would be suddenly more empowered.
Well, and I've felt the same things. I mean, there's a passage that says, I think it's in Ephesians, I forget where it is, where it says that he will not tempt us beyond what we can bear.
Right.
And I've questioned that passage many times because I've really felt many times that I've been tempted beyond what I can bear. And I still struggle with that. But I believe God. I believe what he said is true. That if I pursue the right avenues of the things that he's given me, that I will not be tempted beyond what I can bear. But that is pursuing the right avenues.
Right.
Without focusing internally, but focusing externally. Roger.
Yeah, just that Paul said, too, that if you, for single men, you can't withstand the temptation to get married. And I guess, you know, there's, that doesn't solve the problem, but then the marriage is, because they keep coming back to a lot of the church is wholeness is dependent upon the healthiness of the marriage. Wondering how that all plays in, because I know you have a healthy marriage, you want to honor your wife too, which is accountability again. And plus your sexual needs are probably being met more than, you know, I've always said that if men talk more to their wives get tired of talking, you know, even that's what they watch. And if women, you know, had more sex with men would be, you know, say, stop, you know, it's enough. And I think that's kind of where we are in society, really, in many ways, that if we have a healthy relationship, it's like one of the books I know Steve loves, and we've read some, is Larry Crabb's book on marriage, but he talks about that oneness of the body for a husband and wife.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's kind of just to not have to get to those problems, you can avoid them, I think, or try to avoid them through some of those relational issues and trying to have better relationships. But it's a complicated and lengthy issue, but it's a lot about what we live.
Else? Let me just say also that one of the real dangers of pornographic films and things like that is that you start to think that that's the way, that's natural, that's the things that should be. And believe me, that is not what women want. Because, well, I think it's been shown that, you know, the way that we approach our relationship with our wives from our own individual men's standpoint is a lot different from the way the wives get pleasure out of the things that we do, and they are more for the touching, just the relationship together when you were there, and in some cases they could care less whether or not you actually go through the act. Whereas if you look at those films, you know what, you think that all women want that, and that's not true. It's not true at all, and that's not the way God made them. And that is a lie, and that is a perversion of the natural act that God has for us.
And our perception of what an attractive woman is kind of has changed. I don't know if it's just this day and age or not, but, you know, I mean, and this is any media at all. You know, we kind of think everybody has to remain, you know, just perfect forever.
Yeah.
And that's what's attractive. So as we get older and change, and as our wives get older and change, you know, sometimes it seems less attractive, at least to us or to me. And so that's a difficult thing that's out there always, you know, because you're always looking toward a higher ideal.
With smoking, I feel like I get a lot of help from society because that's real taboo. There's lots of messages that helped me say, don't ever start down that path. And with sexuality, Society's the opposite. There's candy out there constantly, and it's going to be there before my boys and my daughter. But
and it's natural to do it.
So how can I verbalize to my son, some of you guys that have older sons, about the consequences? You know, with smoking, I can talk about health and yellow teeth, and they know people that smell bad, you know, just some real consequence stuff. And so how can I verbalize consequences of this path in a way that they'll realize, you know, not just God says, but hey, there's real consequences to it.
Just one thing that we didn't talk long yesterday, but one thing I said was that I told those boys, I said, I still have the image, first pornographic image I ever saw in my life, and I was probably 8 or 9 years old. I still got it. And Michael confessed to me, he says, you know, it's exactly the same for me. He saw some magazine in those woods back behind the Hope's house, and he was 8 or 9 years old. He says, yeah, it's still there. And I said, you know, that's going to have an effect on the way. I said, let me put it this way. That has an effect on the way I look at women. I mean, that basically is all I said. I kind of looked at that and it warps our minds, and then it's warped forever in a way. And that's what that does. And I think that's one good place to start. It's going to warp your image of women.
So I would encourage you to, kind of in closing, is if you have problems in this area, get with somebody and get an accountability partner. And, I think that's the way that's the out God's given us. I think that's the way he said that I've given you the way of not up to resisting this temptation.
And it's not just like pornography that's bad, I guess. It's like flirting with people. At work or whatever, or not keeping, I guess, an appropriate distance.
Yeah. Yeah.
It seems pretty obvious to me that religious leaders have more trouble with this than most people. When you get down to it, you see how many of them cross the line.
Yeah.
But they're tempted more because they have the opportunities.
Opportunity. And also Satan is decided one way he can get God's people, but get the leaders.
They get relationships, and that's what happens.
So far, every incident that I've read in this book of where the people were giving their stories have all been ministers in some way.
And in youth ministry, they're dropping like flies because of the sexual stuff. It's really discouraging. There's a guy, head of the youth ministry program at Oklahoma City, we've been talking for 12 years. Right every couple months, we'll email each other and say, well, another one bit the dust, and we know exactly what we're talking about. There was a youth minister's conference with the youth specialties, interdenominational thing. They were at a hotel, and they had a record number of pornography movies on that were ordered during that conference.
Really?
Yeah. It's just, it's really... in the youth ministry profession, it's really gotten bad. You got a lot of younger guys that don't have the maturity and so much temptation there.
Okay, thanks guys.